I'm Marty Moscow-Wain. Welcome back to Radio Times. Have you received one of those holiday letters that goes like this? Bill is receiving a Fulbright scholarship. Mary got into Harvard and was the high scorer on her soccer team. Michael is getting a job promotion again. Sarah is getting rave reviews on her new book, and the family dog won the dog show again. These missives are part of a tradition this season, the annual letter detailing the family's many accomplishments. While they might be well-intentioned, the recipient may not feel that way. Our guest, Anne Burnett, has been collecting and researching holiday letters, and she joins us on Radio Times. She's a professor of communication and director of the Women and Gender Studies program at North Dakota State University. Anne Burnett, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Thank you. Nice to be here.
Nice to have you here. Also with us is Susan Krause Whitburn, and she's a professor of psychology at the University of Massachusetts at Amherst, author most recently of a book called The Search for Fulfillment. She blogs at Psychology Today and Huffington Post, where she has written about bragging. And Susan Whitburn, nice to have you with us on Radio Times as well.
Thank you. Great to be here as well.
And to our listeners, lines open at 1-888-477-9499. Send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org. And you can send us a tweet at WHYY Radio Times. We are talking about bragging in this hour of the show. Amber, let me begin with you. When did you get and why did you get interested in researching Christmas cards or holiday cards?
It started in about 1998. I actually had been given a great idea by another scholar in communication that we ought to be studying the fast pace of life and how that impacts relationships. So as I was thinking about preparing for a spring graduate class, I was getting holiday letters, and I noticed how many of them talked about how busy they are. So I started collecting letters in 1998, and I've continued to do that. And one of the side projects that we've done with these letters is obviously there's some bragging going on, and we've been looking at trying to develop from a communication point of view, a prototype of different types of bragging using the letters.
And is saying how busy the family is that another way of bragging from your perspective?
We're finding more and more that that is absolutely true, that being busy is something that is something that you brag about. What you want to try to do is be busier than everybody else.
A competitive busyness or competitive bragging?
Competitive busyness that comes out in bragging form. Yes.
Susan, let me get you in on the conversation. How do you see some of these holiday cards? And I have to say, I get them, and in many ways, it's nice to know what families are doing and nice to know that things are going well, even if they're not going to talk about the bad stuff. Is there something wrong with these, do you think?
Well, I think it depends on really the lens through which you view them. You have to take them with a grain of salt like anything else. And so people are obviously going to focus on the positive aspects of their lives when they're announcing news to others, especially people they're not all that close to who don't know maybe some of those gory details behind the dog show prize or whatever. I became interested in bragging through really looking at holiday letters as well. And I was surprised to see how little research there is on it and how little research there is on bragging in general.
Well, let me go back to you, Anne. And as you said, you've done about, 15 years of collecting of these holiday cards or holiday letters. Are you finding that people just are getting busier and busier and busier as they write about their lives?
They seem to be. Now, I do have some letters from the 70s and 80s, but it's not a very good sample, obviously, because they came well after people knew I was collecting them. And even in some of those letters, they talk about being busy, but just by word count, as we get later and later up to 2014, more and more times you hear people saying they're busy, and then it's also interjected more lately with words like frantic, hectic, that type of thing.
And to you, Susan, does that make sense to you? I mean, I think people do feel busy. I'm not sure why it needs to be included in a holiday card, but nonetheless, does being busy give people bragging rights?
Yeah, I think that there is this competitive busyness. I think that's a great phrase. You see it on Facebook, too, where people want to sound important. So important people are busy. And you would never say take pride in being lazy, I guess, unless you decided perversely to talk about that and to emphasize you're meditating, but that's a different kind of brag. But I think it's the bragging, what I call bragging type four, indirectly drawing attention to something you've done. Because you're, this is indirect. It's not saying, oh, I got this, I got that. It's, I'm so busy that, ... I'm important.
To you, Ann, I'm curious about what have been some of the most unusual Christmas or holiday cards that you have looked at, you and your team?
Well, one that comes to mind is written from the perspective of the dog who died a few years previously and who had been taxidermied. I don't know if I've got the right term there, but it was stuffed. And the dog now sits in the family den and observes the comings and goings of the house from the perspective of that stuffed animal. So that would probably be the most unusual one.
And what do you make of that?
I shake my head.
You don't know what to make of that. Well, what do you make of that, Susan?
I would have to agree with Ann on that one.
Well, and our Ann, yeah, go ahead, Ann.
I'm sorry. That was one that sticks in my mind. But then there are others that, as the years have gone by, people try to get increasingly creative. So they may use an anagram, say, spell out Merry Christmas, and every letter then represents something that they've done during the year. Or they may type the letter so that it's in the shape of a Christmas tree. So there's some really interesting new things, I think, done with computer technology. And I guess the other thing that I think is unusual in some ways is that people increasingly try to be funny.
Uh-huh.
And in my opinion, it's not always all that funny, but they're making an attempt anyway.
Well, guilty as charged, as my friends and family can attest to. Susan, are you surprised that animals or dogs, cats, other animals in the family make an appearance in the Christmas card?
No, I'm not surprised, really. They're, especially depending on the age of the people writing it, if they're older, they may be, you know, the empty nest. And so they're talking about now this other member of their family. I was going to say, I think there's a generational effect as well, and I'd be interested to hear what Ann thinks about this, because when I told my daughter that I was going to write my holiday letter, she said, oh, Mom, why are you doing this? No one does that anymore. And instead, what I've started doing as well is doing picture holiday cards. And so that's, you know, an interesting shift, I think, that we don't talk so much about what we're doing. We show it. And in some ways, that raises the ante, because now you not just have to write about it, you have to document, and your photographs have to be pretty good. So you don't have, not just being funny, but funny and artistic.
Well, I'm curious about so what photographs or what images are you using, or did you think about using, Susan?
Oh, it was a no-brainer for me. Grandchildren.
Okay, fair enough. Can't go wrong with that. Ann, you want to weigh in on that?
I've got a stack of letters in front of me, and just randomly, there's a photo of the two kids dressed for photo day at school. They're on a picture of a tugboat cruise, picture of kids making snowmen, kid graduating from something. So it's even in the pictures, it's bragging. Look at the fun things we do.
But I want to push back a little bit, because I send these out, as I said, you know, sometimes funny, sometimes not so funny, and have received them. And if it's among family and friends, maybe you include some neighbors, maybe even some of the people you work with, shouldn't we want to share some of our good cheer, especially at this time of year, Susan?
I think we should. Yeah, I mean, I think that there's this grain of salt that we want to interpret them through, so you don't look at that letter or set of photos and feel bad about yourself. I mean, everybody knows what the deal is,
right?
And so to then become depressed because everybody else is doing so much better than you would be a natural reaction, but I would recommend against it, because you've got to realize that people are going to put their best year forward in those letters and photos. So, you know, I think there is something really positive about sharing your experiences with people mm-hmm. who you don't ordinarily interact with. And I think it's also a nice opportunity for you as a family to get together, or you as an individual, and narrate your year and look at what you're saying about yourself and what you've accomplished and what your family members have accomplished. So it's a nice kind of year journal entry in some ways.
And you want to weigh in on that?
I see what Susan is saying, and I think for the most part I agree with her, but when you talk to people about the yearly holiday letter, a lot of them immediately roll their eyes. And I think there's a difference between doing a nice report and maybe including a couple photos versus pushing the envelope on the bragging. I don't know if that makes any sense, but some people will see a letter that's two-sided, 8-point font, and they just know what's coming and don't even read it.
Do you see this as the kind of equivalent of, you know, the holiday fruitcake, for instance, Anne?
There you go.
The thing that everyone rolls their eyes at and passes around, and God knows if anyone's actually ever eaten fruitcake or not. So, Anne, we have to say goodbye to you in about a minute or so. Do you send out these cards, or are you more an observer?
I'm now an observer. I can't bring myself to write a letter. I just can't. And in fact, last year I didn't even send out a card or anything. Our family had a picture taken and it was made into those little postcards that you can just slip in, and we didn't even send those out. But this year I'm thinking of just taking those cards, crossing out the date, putting 2014 on there and saying, we look about the same, and not putting any news in there at all. That's about all I can do.
Well, bah humbug to you, Anne Burnett. No, thank you so much for joining us today on Radio Times. And you're welcome. She's been researching holiday cards, a professor of communication and director of the Women and Gender Studies program at North Dakota State University. Susan Krauss-Whitburn is going to stay with us as we continue our conversation. We're talking about bragging in this hour of Radio Times. Good bragging, bad bragging. We want to hear from you. That phone number again, 1-888-477-9499. Send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and send us a tweet at WHYY Radio Times. We'll be right back.
I'll never finish this application in time. The personal essay is way harder than I thought, because it's just not in my nature to brag on myself.
Not even a backdoor brag?
What's a backdoor brag?
Sneaking something wonderful about yourself into everyday conversation. Like when I tell people, it's hard for me to watch American Idol because I have perfect pitch.
Oh, ew.
That's 30 Rock's Jenna Maroney, played by Jane Krakowski, explaining the backdoor brag to Kenneth Purcell, played by Jack McBrayer. Again, our guest is Susan Krauss-Whitburn. She's a professor of psychology at the University of Massachusetts, wrote a book called The Search for Fulfillment. She blogs at Psychology Today and Huffington Post. In fact, she has been blogging there about bragging, which is the reason we wanted her to join us on Radio Times. And you can join us as well. Looks like calls coming in at 1-888-477-9499. I'm curious to you, Susan, whether, since we do have all these outlets now to brag about ourselves, social media, has that made us a nation of braggarts?
Well, I have a feeling it's been a general human tendency that has only been reinforced by social media. But, yeah, I don't think there's anything new about bragging. It's just there may be more norms developing around it than there were before, just because there are so many outlets. And that backdoor bragging, or what I call the humble brag, I mean, that's probably the most infuriating in a way, because it's the one, just be honest, you're bragging, just, you know, here, something to be proud of, you or your kids or your dog or your cat, just say it and don't feel embarrassed. So maybe we bracket our bragging in those terms because these norms are changing and we feel that it isn't okay to just say, hey, this good thing happened to me. You have to denounce it in some way.
And that's the backdoor or the humble brag, which is, you know, which is sort of bragging and then taking it back or somehow diminishing it at the same time.
Absolutely. And it makes it more obvious that you know you're bragging when you do that, which, again, I think adds to the negative impression that that creates.
And that's why it's so infuriating to people, which is just if you did something, if something good happened, then own it, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's like, I guess, the equivalent of passive aggressiveness. Uh-huh. You know, people sometimes refer outright aggression to passive aggression because then it's out there and you can deal with it.
Let me get some callers in. Looks like we have Mark from media joining us on Radio Times. Mark, go ahead. You are on Radio Times. Go ahead.
First, I'd like to thank you for taking the phone call.
Sure, no problem.
And the question is to the educator from the Amherst.
Yes.
And what I would like to ask is not so much at what level of bragging or like the holiday season. Is bragging a general like level of Maslow's hierarchy of human needs?
Do we need to brag? Well, that's a high-powered question. Yeah, go ahead, Susan.
That is a great question. I would say that it fits in with the need for esteem, perhaps, because you're bragging. The bragging is doing something for your sense of self. So, yeah, I think it fits in quite well. And it's the need for esteem is not one of the higher or what he would call a higher order need. So mm-hmm. I think that's an excellent point.
But does it also speak to the possibility that someone feels insecure about themselves and that's why they feel this need to brag?
Absolutely. I think that's right. It is this sort of a deficit need. I have to feel good about myself, and the way I'm going to do that is showing how it's much better I am than you, which I think is what comes down mm-hmm. to, because bragging is a social phenomenon. And that's where the recipient of the brag can be, I think, patient and understanding and recognize where that need to brag is coming from. I mean, it's annoying when people do it, but it also, if you care about the other person and you realize they're coming at it from a place of insecurity.
So what do you think is then a healthy way to express happiness about one's success?
I think there's only one way to do it, and it's just to state it and just put it out there. Because what I said in the blog is probably the best way to brag is to report on a conversation in which you were praised, where the evidence can be verified. So this was a study done by Susan Speer, a social psychologist, and she said the only form of self-praise that is moderately acceptable is the one in which you quote from someone else's conversation. Mm-hmm. So then it's not you who's bragging about yourself, but you're saying, oh, such and such said my fruitcake is the best she's ever tasted.
But isn't that, I mean, it's not even almost a worse brag, because, I mean, talk about not owning it. You're saying that someone else is saying that you're so great.
Well, I that's what the study found, where you sort of have evidence for the quality of your work or performance. But, I mean, personally, I think stating plainly without a lot of bracketing, occasionally, not all the time, occasionally when it's sincere, is fine.
Yeah. I mean, and again, I'm pushing back just a little bit here, only because certainly with friends and family, if good things have happened to them, I want to know about it. I mean, I want to know the bad stuff too, but I definitely want to know if they got a job promotion. I would be angry with them if they didn't share that with me.
Yeah, and I love the way you put it, Marty, because it's your reaction to somebody else's information. And so for the bragger to put on the recipient's mental set can be great, because it's sort of putting, you know, empathy. So how would somebody else feel if they heard this?
Right.
Would they feel happy?
Right.
If so, fine. If they'd feel miserable because they didn't get that promotion, then you might want to figure out some other way to share your news.
So think about how that person would receive your news of your accomplishment.
Yes, yes. And I think that's why the holiday letter is another good case to talk about, because you have an audience that you're writing this to. Although the same is true on Facebook, there's an audience there.
Mm-hmm.
So put yourself in the from the framework of the audience and think, would you be annoyed if somebody else said this, or would you be truly happy for them?
Mark, thanks for the call to Radio Times. Let me see what Laura from Basking Ridge, New Jersey has to say. Laura, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Yes, hi.
Hi there.
Good morning.
Morning.
Thank you for taking the call.
You're welcome.
I just wanted to add to the comments about the holiday letter. I'm actually a fan of the holiday letter. I like receiving them, and I used to like sending them, but I most definitely did get mixed review about what we would send out. You know, some people, of course, view it as sort of the bragging thing, but some others, I think, view it as what I intended it to be, which was just simply, geez, I haven't talk to you in so many months, and this is what's going on, and, you know, the good and the bad. But given the mixed reaction, I sort of got away from sending the holiday letter. I don't send it out anymore. But there are other reasons why I think a holiday letter is important. And for me, I still sit down and spend an hour writing a holiday letter every year.
Hmm.
And I don't send it.
Oh, you don't?
I do it because, no, I don't send it. I do it because when I really thought about the reasons why I did it, it was because it sort of gave me pause to look back on the year, to think about everything that happened, which we don't often do. We don't reflect back on time. We always look for what's happening going forward. And so I sort of use it as time to reflect on what occurred, to write it down almost in a diary format, but third person. And I actually insert that in my Christmas book every year that I keep, just as a sort of a record of this is all that we did, good and bad, you know, whether someone died or whether someone was promoted, it's all in there. And that's a keepsake that I treasure. I can look back, you know, 5, 6, 7, 8 years ago at my letters and say, wow, I remember that, and
yeah,
I did
great.
That. So it's a form of validation. Maybe it's a form of, you know, esteem boosting. I don't know. I mean, certainly I like to look at the accomplishments, but I do think the holiday letter is can be more than just bragging.
Well, you know what, Laura,
think about what it could accomplish.
Sure,
right?
No, I think you raise actually a really interesting point and a really interesting variation on the holiday letter. And Susan, I'd be curious about your response to how sort of Laura solved this for herself.
Yeah, I really like that use of the end of the year letter, I guess you would say, and using it as an opportunity to reflect, because we do have a need kind of to have a narrative about our lives. And so rarely, as Laura pointed out, do we actually stop and create one. Maybe we do so at very sporadic intervals, but this way she's really kind of disciplined herself to do it and has created what you call the keepsake, Laura, but it really, I think, is a lot more than that, and it's something that other people will eventually inherit,
right.
I assume.
Yeah, children, grandchildren.
I like that idea of looking back at your old holiday letters, and I always just use the same format. So I just go back and look at the one from the previous year and say, oh, huh, that's interesting that I said that at that time. So I kind of feel the same way, but mine is going to – it's a limited audience.
Right.
And mainly I do consider it a documentation. But yeah, Laura, I'd say having a narrative like that makes a lot of sense. And congratulations for actually sitting down and doing it for that purpose.
Sure.
And not putting it off.
for oneself as well, and certainly sounds like for the family. Laura, thanks for the call to Radio Times. We're talking about holiday letters. We're talking about bragging. And again, our guest, Susan Krause Whitburn, is a professor of psychology at the University of Massachusetts at Amherst. She blogs at Psychology Today and Huffington Post, where she has written about bragging. That's where we found her, and we invited her to join us on Radio Times to take your calls and to talk about, I guess, good bragging, bad bragging. That phone number again, 1-888-477-9499. Send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and you can send us a tweet at WHYY Radio Times. We have an email from Tom from Haverford. He says, in Texas, where I was born, they say, if you can do it, it ain't bragging, which is kind of clever there. Deborah sent an email. She said, I think holiday letters come off as bragging because, like Facebook, they are one-sided. They show no care for the recipient and are, by definition, mass-distributed, just feels impersonal and rude. That's from Deborah. Does that make sense to you in part, Susan?
Yeah, that, you know, there is a lot of truth to that, that it does seem impersonal. So, and you could really look at it both ways, though, that you are taking the time to share news with the people in your circle because it tends to be news of a personal nature.
Right.
It's not like you're sending your CV around, you know, your resume to people. But, yeah, I mean, you can personalize them, though, with little messages at the bottom. And I, again, I think we got to realize what they are and what they can do and what they can't do.
And it's interesting to think about one circle of friends because, you know, using Facebook as an example, you can friend someone on Facebook, but they, you know, they may not be a real friend in the way that we think of them in the more analog world.
Absolutely. And that's, again, where thinking about the reaction of the all those people, not the just the people in your closest circle, how they're all going to interpret your news or your photos or, you know, the kind of reflections that you share on there is important. If you want to use Facebook to just track a whole lot of people, you can do that, but you just have to be cautious about what you're posting on there.
Mm. Let me see what Cindy from Wayne, Pennsylvania has to say. Cindy, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Thanks for taking my call.
You're welcome.
I guess I just wanted to offer insight from a group of people who have lost their children. As far as Christmas cards, I lost my son 6 years ago, and I still find the holidays difficult. But I think what's really hard is when you receive cards from people that have, you know, with the pictures of their families, and how difficult that is to see when your family is no longer complete.
Well, first of all, Cindy, I'm really sorry to hear that you lost a child, and I imagine this has got to be a tough time of year for you and others in that same situation.
It is. I mean, every year you think it's going to get better, and it's, you know, still very difficult. And so I tend to, I mean, I'm. It's nice to receive cards from my friends to know we're still thought about, but I have to say I keep them, and I can't even open them till after the holidays. So I might suggest just, you know, sending a different kind of Christmas card and just saying, you know, thinking of you and your family or that type of thing, but not including a photo of, you know, their own family.
And that's thinking, obviously, of the situation that you're in. Susan, what do you think about that?
Yeah, I think that's really that whole idea of imagining who your audience is. And it to stop and think before you enclose that particular card or that letter or those photos, who it's going to when you know that person has experienced a tragic loss. And to not, I think, to just blithely go around and fill a bunch of envelopes isn't respectful of people whose situations are difficult. But it does raise another question of what if you have bad news that occurred to you during the year? How do you? That's not going to be within the norm of a holiday letter to say this somebody had an accident and, you know, all this has happened. But on the other hand, it's being honest to without kind of making everybody, you know, in your circle feel miserable. If you feel the way you share that can be done so that it's a kind of reporting honestly and also informing people that this happened, and it's a change from the previous year, I think that can perhaps in some ways be therapeutic. Cindy, to write about that experience.
I bet. And I would assume the recipients, I mean, most of them would respond in a way, in a heartfelt kind of way, getting a letter like that at this time of year.
I agree. And then that, if they didn't know about this happening and this is their first time hearing about it, it's a chance for you to get additional support or you and your family to get support.
William writes, it's not just bragging in the Christmas letters. Our country is wrapped up in this notion of exceptionalism. We are repeatedly told that Americans are exceptional, that our destiny is to save the world from itself. We look at sports teams. He sees this as a kind of peculiar psychosis, that's his word, to our American society. Do you agree with that, Susan?
Well, I don't really buy into that so much because, people have been, countries have been jingoistic for a long time. In fact, the phrase was invented, having to do with the British Empire over 100 years ago. So I don't know. I think we see it a lot from within our society, but I think it's true around the world that whatever you're a part of, you tend to see those people as the heroes.
We're almost up on a break here, but you referenced this earlier, and I guess through social media, we just have more outlets, more sites where we can post and we can boast things about ourselves.
Right, absolutely.
Well, let's take a very short break. We'll get back to our conversation. Yes, we are talking about bragging in this hour of Radio Times, talking with Susan Krause Whitburn. She's a professor of psychology at the University of Massachusetts at Amherst, wrote a book most recently called The Search for Fulfillment, and she has been blogging about bragging at Psychology Today and the Huffington Post. We're going to take a short break, get some more callers in at 1-888-477-9499. What is good bragging, bad bragging for you? You can also send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and you can send us a tweet at whyyradiotimes. Much more after this short break. We'll be right back.
Do you know who I am?
No. I can't say that I do.
I don't know how to put this, but I'm kind of a big deal.
Really?
People know me.
Well, I'm very happy for you.
That's Anchorman Ron Burgundy, played by Will Ferrell, and he's trying out a pickup line. And Susan, that's a good response, don't you think, to someone as obnoxious as that?
Absolutely. I love the examples that you're choosing, too.
Well, we had a lot to actually choose from. I'm wondering, though, about, again, I guess I'm going back to Facebook or social media where people can post things about their life. What do you think about people, though, posting sort of their day? Here I am getting breakfast. Here I am getting lunch. Here I am getting dinner. Here I am working out. Do you see that as boastful or just a way of documenting your day and sharing it with your friends?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, it is what it is. I think people use Facebook for so many different reasons. And again, it's if you're that person doing that, I don't want to say, oh, that's terrible, what a mistake, how silly, because it's fulfilling some need in you. I would just advise people to think about their audience. I keep saying that, but it's really a social media, so it's having an effect on people in your social circle, and consider what that effect might be, or even worse, the people outside your social circle. So I was just looking somebody up, a student here, to try to just figure out where she was in school or whether she was on study abroad. And I was shocked to see the pictures on there. I don't know her. I'm not in her circle, but boy, those are not photos I would think would be appropriate for somebody to use. So there's a kind of Facebook exhibitionism that people have, and they think it's really cool to show their spring break photos or right now holiday party photos, office drunken bash photos. But, really imagine who is viewing those.
Is that because it's sort of done in the moment of excitement or exhilaration that just, people are just not thinking past themselves?
Yeah, I think that's true. I think there's a lot of infectious Facebook sharing that goes on. It's like when their Twitter goes crazy when there's some awards ceremony or sport, you know, the Super Bowl, people are tweeting like crazy about it. And then afterwards you say, oh, my, I can't believe I tweeted that.
I've done that,
actually.
You know,
you just get caught up in the moment.
Well, and I think we're also trying to navigate between what's public and what's private these days, you know, whether it's talking on cell phones and crowded trains or the whole social media thing. I just think we haven't quite exactly mastered that yet.
No, but that's pretty funny, the example about the cell phones, because people say the most incredible things on cell phones, personal information that they share, their, you know, their frequent flyer number, sometimes their credit card number. One time my daughter and I were in a, you know, a shuttle bus from the airport, and we thought we would pretend to have a cell phone conversation with somebody that was dramatic and arguing and really, really personal just to see what other people would do, but we didn't.
But
that's where, think about, you know, get outside of yourself and look at how what you're doing or sharing would look to somebody else, especially somebody who doesn't know you.
Let me see what Matt from Reading has to say. Matt, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hi.
Hi there.
This is kind of a general comment, but without giving you my life story, I had a history of having been bullied, so I have some self-esteem issues, but I went from high school into the world of retail, so I've got a lot of good people skills. With that in mind, I had a career change, and now I am a writer.
Wow.
And I find it like the opposite of what you're talking about. You know, the whole idea of talking yourself up is treacherous, so I avoid it so much that I don't even promote myself when I should. It's like anti-bragging, which might sound like a humble brag, but since you don't know who I am, I'm going to go with it.
No. I don't think that is a humble brag, because you're not bragging at all. You're not bragging and then taking it back. You're just not bragging, right?
Yeah. And like, I have a card to hand out now, and I have to say to people, do you mind if I give you a card? Because I'm afraid of coming across like I'm bragging. Like, I wrote a novel and I want to tell people about it, but I don't want to seem like I'm bragging. Like, it's so odious to me. And I think a lot of people have that feeling. I'm just curious, like, how would you deal with that? How do you navigate those waters between promoting yourself legitimately and sounding like you're bragging?
Well, Matt, it's a great question. Hold on. Let me give Susan a chance to give you some response.
Yeah, I think that's such a kind of incredible perspective to have. It's very respectful of other people, because you are taking their feelings into account and you're going out of your way not to brag, which I'm sure is tremendously appreciated. But what you might be a good candidate for this type of bragging, where you talk about what somebody else said about you, so that you're not the one promoting yourself. You're saying, such and here I have this story to tell where somebody said what a great job I did providing them with a service or whatever it is you sell, a product that they needed. So, you know, you might – the fact that you're thinking about it, I think, is admirable. But there can be ways for you to not self-promote, but to take ownership of things that you do that you're proud of without feeling bad about it.
Matt, does that sound like something you could do?
Yeah, kind of like an oblique brag.
I think you just coined a new phrase here.
Yeah, it's kind of oblique. But it's also one that where it's evidence-based. That's what I would call it.
Right. Well, Matt, I appreciate the call to Radio Times.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome. And you can call as well. That phone number is 1-888-477-9499. We are looking at all sides of bragging with our guest Susan Krause Whitburn. And we're also taking emails at radiotimes@whyy.org. And you can send us a tweet at WHYY Radio Times. And Susan, sounds like he's a modest person. And I don't know if there's a place in the world for modest people, because we have so many avenues for self-promotion.
Yeah, but it's like a cleansing breath to run into somebody who is so modest. And I think he was pretty funny about the way he referred to his bragging. But yeah, I I think maybe we have gone into overdrive compared to how modesty used to be a virtue, and now it's self-promotion is a virtue, but at the same time, it coexists with a desire for modesty and not to be offensive. And maybe it's just added a layer of complexity to our thoughts about how we are in the world, because we have to think about the things we've done, then how do we frame these, and then how do we frame them in a way that is helpful to us and helps us accomplish our goals but isn't hurtful to other people.
But do you think there's something between modesty and bragging? I mean, some sort of middle ground there, which is just sharing.
Sharing. I do think they're sharing. And I think that it's worse when you have to frame it in that way, the humble brag. It's still better, I think, to be direct about it and think about what you're saying and then say it in a way that is reflective. And I think most people can appreciate that. Like, I'm really happy this happened to me at work, or I was so thrilled that my six-year-old, you know, did this. And you're owning the feeling, and also I would be really careful about the number of times you do this on a daily basis.
Keep it to a minimum,
or
right?
The same person. Yeah, or if you feel a desperate need to brag, just, you know, find your best friend or your sister or brother or person that you or your son or daughter, the person you communicate with the most, and have a good old time with it. And then you'll have gotten that out of your system.
I was reading some research. I don't know if you've looked at this or whether even if it's true or not, but there's been some brain research. I think it came out of a Harvard study saying that there's a kind of reward center in the brain that when you talk about yourself, you are rewarding that part of your brain. Does that make sense to you?
I guess so. I mean, there is a reward center in the brain, and if you find it feels good to talk about yourself and reflect on your accomplishments, it probably would be stimulated. But I think there's other – it's really hard to pinpoint an exact location in the brain where certain things happen. We would hope that that reward center is balanced off by the other parts of the brain that are into executive function, what we call planning and thinking about your behaviors and how they affect others.
Let me get back to our callers at 1-888-477-9499, talking about bragging in this hour of Radio Times. We have, looks like, Florence from Little Egg Harbor, New Jersey. Hi, Florence. Go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hi, Marty. Thanks.
You're welcome.
I get a card every year, speaking of Christmas cards, from a friend who travels. She's with her second husband, and we were friends many years ago. And every year I get this card about all the wonderful places she has traveled in the past year. And to me, it's a brag, and it makes me feel sort of like, gosh, I didn't do any of that.
Aww.
So maybe it's just me, you know, and she's not bragging. Maybe I'm just taking it the wrong way.
Well, that's an interesting comment. I'm curious, Florence, if you were with her, would she be telling you all about her travels around the world?
Probably. And I wouldn't be traveling, so
would you feel
the same way?
You would feel the same way. Susan, what do you think?
Probably.
Well, Florence, the great thing about a holiday letter is you don't have to read it. It's certainly better than sitting with somebody who's being insufferable about their wonderful travels. You just don't have to. You know, you can sort of scan it, see what it's about, make sure nobody died, and then put it away because it's not really going to help you feel better at this time of year.
So don't take it too personally and just kind of move on. Florence, I appreciate the call to Radio Times. Susan, then I'm curious then about, I mean, if people don't like this, if people don't like bragging, what do you say to someone who is a braggart? I mean, what is the way to sort of call them out on it, maybe not in a hostile way, but just in a way that you want to tell them about their effect on you?
Yeah. Well, I had another blog about 8 ways to handle a narcissist. So I think we're verging into that territory.
I think we are.
Because people who brag all the time certainly have narcissistic tendencies. And so if it's if it's somebody where you can't really run away and hide, you do have to kind of find a way without seeming defensive or critical or hostile to let them know the effect it's having on you. That I think just the way Florence talked about her friend with the travels, if she were to have to see her in person and constantly have to hear about this, it would be a great, I think, service probably to her friend, but certainly help the relationship if she could say, you know, look, whatever her name is,
right.
I'm happy that you're traveling around, but I got to let you know that it's making it really tough for me because I just don't have the opportunity to travel. So, you know, I think just sharing that feeling and then seeing where that goes, the friend may take offense or the friend may be very relieved and appreciative.
Because it may be unintentional, but I hopefully, Florence, you can find an opportunity to do that. Let me see what Lauren from Drexel Hill has to say. Hi, Lauren. Go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hi. Yeah, my question for the guest is, I wonder if she had done any research about bragging about misfortune. For example, like my aunt sends, well, she hasn't recently, but she used to send a family letter at Christmas time, and it was so awful with the misfortune of the family and maybe like downplaying her children's attributes. It was, and so I just wonder if that's another form of bragging, is maybe a pity brag, or I don't know.
Wow. Yeah, that's kind of shocking, Lauren.
Brag.
A pity brag. What do you think about that, Susan?
Wow. Yeah, I did not see that one coming.
No, me neither.
I have to say, Lauren. Yeah, I mean, I think some people I call it basking in the reflected glory of others, but you're showing how strong you are because you're able to cope, survive all of these kind of threats to your well-being and your emotional well-being. Look how I've managed to deal with all of this. So in a way, I guess it is a pity brag, how far the people will go in order to kind of get a reaction out of others.
Yeah. Lauren, would this relative do this in person as well? I'm just curious.
Yes, very much so. I mean, it was very much her personality, but I just wondered if there is someone, you know, if there are people like that who really, this is their way of bragging, is to kind of be a martyr. You know, like, this is what I've had to put up with.
No,
I think that's right. Yeah, I think that's right. So it's the opposite of basking in glory. It's really reveling in misfortune, but also showing, how strong I am, that I made it through this. That's how I would interpret it without knowing much more about it.
Of course. Lauren, thanks for the call to Radio Time. So, Susan, we're almost out of time here, but I'm curious about how you got interested in narcissists and bragging.
Oh, well, you know, we deal with them all the time, don't we?
We do.
So I'm part of what I do research on is abnormal psychology and identity, and narcissism really fits in with both of those areas because, I mean, it is a bona fide psychological disorder, but then there's also the more ordinary egocentrism that everybody has of seeing yourself as the center of the universe, and the question is how much do you do that? And when it becomes an extreme, it is narcissism. So that's how I got interested in it. Always a fascinating topic.
Well, Susan Krause Whitburn, thank you very much for joining us today on Radio Times.
My pleasure, Marty. Take care.
You too, and happy holidays to you as well. And to our listeners, go to whyy.org/radiotimes. You can find out how to download podcasts of the show. You can post all sorts of information about yourself on our Facebook page, and you can follow us on Twitter. Kevin Griffin, the engineer for today's edition of Radio Times, produced by Susan Greenbaum, Debbie Bilder, Emily Bryant, and John Ahrens. I'm Marty Moscowen. Thank you so much for joining us.